Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy Tom Fairbanks. Tom, engineering and producing the show. We are off to a pretty good-looking weekend there, Tom. It's going to be warm. It's going to be a little bit windy. But the good news, the backside of the winds, as often happens here, cooler weather. And maybe, is there a slight chance of rain?
There's a 20% chance.
20%.
Next Tuesday.
Okay, we'll keep our fingers crossed. Buckmaster in the Green Thing Zocalo Village Studio. Today is Friday. It's the 8th day of April 2022 on 1030, Tucson's trusted source for news talk, KVOI, The Voice. We are into year 12 of our radio show, 34th year on TV and radio here in the Tucson market, worldwide live listening and podcasts of my show at buckmastershow.com. Our live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management, our media partners, which prominently display our logo and a link to the Buckmaster Show, TucsonSentinel.com, Green Valley News and Saharita Sun, Tucson Local Media Group and its portfolio of publications, including Inside Tucson Business, Tucson Weekly, Oro Valley Explorer, Marana News, Foothills News, and Desert Times. Before we introduce our Friday Focus interview, let's introduce our guest reporter today, and that is Dylan Smith, editor and publisher and founder of the 11-year-old online news service, TucsonSentinel.com. Dylan is president of the Arizona Press Club and immediate past president of Lion Publishers. Lion is an acronym for local independent online news publishers. Dylan, how are you, sir?
Doing pretty good. I hope everybody out there is enjoying this wonderful, sunny southern Arizona day.
Good-looking day, and we'll talk with Dylan later about his... Well, I'll say it right off the top. Congratulations on your big exclusive. Brought a lot of people who have not been aware of what Tucson Sentinel does. Now, I think you've won over a lot of new folks to TucsonSentinel.com with your big exclusive about Chuck Huckleberry, but we'll get to that a little later in the program. What do you say, Dylan?
All right.
All right, let's introduce now Tim Tomier. Tim is with us. Tim, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Doing well. Thanks for asking. Tim is the assistant city manager for the city of Tucson. He oversees the public works functions of the city, including Tucson Water, Parks and Recreation, Environmental and General Services, Planning and Developmental Services, Transportation and Mobility, and Housing and Community Development. Did I miss anything, or is that still the portfolio?
That's still the group, and it's plenty to keep an eye on.
Tim is a licensed professional engineer, civil engineer. His expertise, he's an expert in strategic planning, project delivery, and water policy. He's pursuing his PhD in geography from the University of Arizona. The dissertation work explores the Arizona Drought Contingency Plan, known as the DCP, as a climate adaptation strategy. And why don't I ask you right off the bat, how serious should be, or how concerned should we be about the Tier 1 shortage on the Central Arizona project?
That's a great question. Specifically to where we are right now with the Tier 1 shortage, Tucsonans are not losing any water supply, not losing any access to water supply. So it's certainly something we're keeping an eye on. But where the concern lies is what's next. So if we were to stay in a Tier 1 shortage situation and we would get the precipitation we need in the mountains in Colorado, we could stay in a Tier 1 shortage indefinitely, and really Tucsonans wouldn't feel any impact. The real concern comes from what lies ahead. And if we continue to have drought year after drought year, as we've done for the past over two decades, eventually there would come a time when the amount of water coming to Tucson could be reduced, and we'd have to rely on our long-term planning of the past to get us through.
Are we uniquely positioned in the city of Tucson to handle a real long, hopefully it won't be a lot, it's already, as you say, been over two decades, and we are apparently in something of a drought that is of historic proportions, going back maybe 1,000, even 1,200 years.
We are in unique times, and it's not times that I think most communities were preparing for, because when you think of a lifespan and you think of what we've observed from the Colorado River, it is unprecedented. And so Tucson is uniquely positioned to withstand that. Because
why are we uniquely positioned?
Two main things. One is we have our large regional aquifers here in Tucson, both in the Tucson Basin and just to the west of the Tucson Mountains in Avra Valley, where we've actually, since the 70s, controlled much of that land and much of that water. So we have a really big storage of water here locally. That is something most communities lacked. It also is high-quality water. And so there are communities that have big aquifers, but those aquifers have become significantly contaminated over time because of industrial activity. Tucson is really benefited from the way we've approached growth and development such that we've preserved that water. Then the other piece is the way Tucsonans treat water. They use it wisely. They are use xeriscape landscaping. They use every drop of water very, very cautiously, very wisely, and they're great stewards of water. Those two things, the storage we have and the use of water that we have as a community, make us uniquely positioned to be in good shape.
Let's bring in our friend Dylan Smith from TucsonSentinel.com. Dylan, you're with Tim.
Yeah, Tim, well, first off, real quick, what don't you oversee over at the city? It seems like everything is in your bailiwick. But more seriously, on the topic of water, there have been some studies done by the city lately that seem to point to both the rainwater harvesting ordinance and the sort of gray water program, you know, to encourage people to do more with the to reuse some water, to do more with the water that, actually does come here when it rains. Those haven't been working out very well, have they? And what are you trying to do to sort of get that back into gear?
The you're correct that some of the ordinances we've had that should be putting us in an even better position than we are, the application and enforcement or implementation of them is not where we'd like it to be. Specifically with respect to the commercial rainwater harvesting, where those new commercial developments have gone in and they've done it well, you can see they have great tree canopy, they have low water use, and they've actually had great outcomes. So to shout out, there's the Target on Oracle, on North Oracle, if you've gone and parked there, you have shade when you park, and that all... or the vast majority of that comes from rainwater. So what we're trying to do is get more voluntary compliance, but also apply some additional resources to make sure that we're doing our part to make sure that a new development gets designed properly and then installed properly. And if you do those two things, then the rest takes care of itself. The rains will come when they do come, and the water source is there. So it's really just making sure that we're doing our part, which, as you point out, and as became clear quite recently, we were not doing our part of that equation, at least on the commercial piece. What I'll say is, a lot of people are familiar with other aspects of where we harvest rain, namely at your house scale. We've had robust rainwater harvesting rebate programs. Those are quite successful. They've gone well, and then we have a new, it's about maybe 2 years old now, but Green Stormwater Infrastructure Program. And that's become very popular, where we work with neighborhoods and we provide funding for them to do rainwater harvesting along the roadway, within the right-of-way, and immediately adjacent. So we've really seen great results there. We do have work to do on the commercial side, and expansion of those programs as we move forward is really going to be key to the community staying sustainable.
How about this land?
The one program you mentioned is where people can get the city to come in and do a curb cut and kind of feed some of that runoff into a basin, so it'll help grow trees rather than continue washing down the street.
That's correct. That's exactly. And you're seeing that. One of the nice things is it's a small investment done many times across the whole basin, and that's the kind of approach that really makes us more resilient.
Do we still enforce, do we have some kind of a landscape water law that we enforce in the city?
We do have expectations around the types of landscape that people can install and the types of plants that they should be using that are prepared for not just the Sonoran Desert as we know it, but also, as drought continues into the future. And we do have water waste ordinances where if people are watering their property and the water's running down the street, we of course, begin with education and come in to try to work with the property owner to get that corrected. But we do have some enforcement capability should we need it.
Dylan, before I move on from water, did you have anything more related to water?
I think we've pretty much finished our dive into that one.
Okay, now what about the kind of 30-second elevator pitch, Tim, about Proposition 411? This would be pretty much $740 million for street repair and safety upgrades if passed by the voters May 17th. That's not that far away. Early balloting would be going out soon, wouldn't it?
Yeah, just in a little over a week's time, the early ballots will be coming out. And so I'm here to inform, not to advocate.
Of course.
But
just what would it do? Kind of, it's an extension, right, of really what started 5 years ago?
That's correct. Yeah. So it's a half-cent sales tax, which is already being paid by folks in Tucson. And that was known as Prop 101, and we've been using those monies to deliver both public safety projects like fire station replacements, things of that nature, and some money of that went toward roadways, but not nearly enough. And so we acknowledge and we know that our road systems in Tucson, the neighborhood roads especially, need significant investment. And up to 85% of our neighborhood roads are either in poor or failed condition, and that's no secret. And believe me, we hear about it every day. So, the sales tax extension, 80% of that money would be used to go in and address our neighborhood streets. So, and the commitment is that within a 10-year period, every neighborhood street in Tucson that's maintained by the city would be addressed in some way, either rebuilt. Or in many cases, if it's already in good shape, it'd be preserved. Or if it's somewhere in the middle, it would get a treatment that brings it back up to a good level of service and extends its useful life. And then the other 20% of the funds would be to improve road safety, bike and pedestrian, things of that nature. Because the other troubling thing we're seeing besides the condition of our roads is the number of people that are getting injured or killed on our streets. Is staggering, and it's unacceptable. And so if we are fortunate enough to have the voters approve Prop 411, we have a 10-year commitment to invest those monies in those two areas, our safety and in the condition of our residential streets.
The five-year program, the initial program, included upgrades for police and fire. Is there anything in there for them this time around?
Not directly in Proposition 411. However, as part of the city's commitment to public safety, and it as noted on our Truth in Taxation related to Prop 411, there's a $90 million commitment over 5 years to continued investment in public safety, which includes police, fire, and our 911 communications. So the tax monies would only be used for the roads and the safety of roads, but the general fund of the city has a commitment for $90 million for public safety.
Okay, Dylan, anything you would like to add before I talk about Mona's Danish Bakery?
Real quickly, because Tim just raised it. For a number of years, we were hearing an awful lot about the problems over at the 911 communications center. Are things getting straightened out over there? Or, are people getting the kind of service that they should be getting at this point?
They are. It's a significantly improved environment there. We can credit new police chief Chad Kazmar. He, prior to being named police chief, he spent a year overseeing on assignment the 911 communications center. So he did a great job job of making sure that that communication center had the physical environment developed to be successful and began the culture shift to make sure that the people had the investments and training they needed. When he went to TPD as our new chief, Sharon McDonough, who was his deputy in that assignment, is now the overseeing the 911 communication center, and she's the leader they need for this time. She's really focused on stabilizing the staffing, making sure they have enough staff, but more importantly, making sure that those staff have the training they need to serve the community well, and they have a future. They have hope for the future that they can develop and be with us long term.
And we will meet Ms. McDonough, who is the new 911 director. She'll be our Friday Focus interview May 13th. And you mentioned the new police chief, Chief Kazmar. He will be our Friday Focus interview April 22nd. So we've got both coming up in the next few weeks. But right now, I want to talk about Mona's Danish Bakery. Tim, I know you love bakery goods like I do. What are you in the mood for today? What sounds good to you from Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle?
So I'm glad you asked that, because for many times, I've not been able to answer you that I had the Kringle.
Right.
We had the Danish Kringle for Christmas this year.
Wonderful.
On Christmas Day, we broke it out in the morning. Mm-hmm. We had the kids over, and we were enjoying our time. And that was the hit of the day, the Danish Kringle. And what surprised me is how fresh it stayed for how long.
Yes.
Because I nibbled on that for about a week, and it was wonderful.
And Dylan, what are you in the mood for?
You know what I'm after right now is just a really good cup of coffee. And I know they do that up there.
Yeah, they do. They can take care of you there at Mona's. Right now they are open for lunch. Northeast corner, Swan and Sunrise. The website's monasdanishbakery.com. They are open for breakfast, and people are waiting when Steve opens the door at 6:30. Open Tuesday through Sunday. Check it out, Mona's Danish Bakery. We'll be right back. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax, which expires in June 2026. To prepare for ongoing project delivery, the RTA board established a Citizens Advisory Committee to select projects for a new draft plan. The committee will help identify which projects to invest in to best meet regional transportation needs. Learn more about plan development and provide early input at rtanext.com. Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary. Home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org. This is Bill Buckmaster. You've heard me talk about choosing Tucson International Airport. While fewer people are traveling lately, our airport is doing even more these days to help ensure traveler health safety, including counter safety shields, physical distancing markers, enhanced cleaning, and more. It's called TUS Cares, and you can learn more at flytucson.com. These may be different times, but my priority remains to fly Tucson, Tucson International Airport. Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100. Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, a gorgeous Friday afternoon here in Tucson, Arizona. Tim Tomier is with us. Tim is the assistant city manager, and he wears lots of hats. He kind of oversees a lot of departments, including parks. We'll talk with him a moment about parks, but also want to reintroduce Dylan Smith, who is the editor and publisher of TucsonSentinel.com. And before I go back to you, Dylan, one of our listeners, Richard, has a good question for Tim because he's very much involved with parks and recreation. Tim, Richard wants to know, what about those park improvements? I think over $200 million was funded a few years ago. What's the overview these days?
That's a great question, and that's Proposition 407, and over a multi-year period, about $225 million of bonds will be sold and then used for park improvements, and it's important to note connections improvements, so things like bicycle boulevards and other ways, non-car ways to get around Tucson and to our parks. So we're in phase one, and we've actually delivered a number of projects already. New splash pads, new playgrounds, things of that nature. And then we have a couple of major park projects in the very near future. So on the south side, Gunny Barreras Park, which is actually located at Sunnyside High School. So it's a place where the high school and the city work together to provide a community benefit.
Multi-use, I think. Yeah.
Multi-use and significant investments there. We're in the planning phases for a number of others. We have Jacobs Park is in a planning phase, Joaquin Murrieta Park. So those investments are beginning, and actually many have occurred. Many are under construction right now, but we're in phase one. We've got two more phases ahead. So over the next several years, you'll see those park improvements continue.
We have a lot of swimming pools, right?
We do have a number of swimming pools.
But not enough lifeguards.
Not enough lifeguards. It's right. It's we did recently, if I can shop for lifeguards on your
sure,
show.
Go ahead.
We recently raised our pay for lifeguards, and we're hoping to attract folks into the city. A lifeguard's a great place to start. It's a great job for a period of time, and you can get some decent pay. It's also a pathway into your future. If you want to be a firefighter, if you want to be a public servant, starting as a lifeguard is a great way to get your foot in the door.
Can you talk about pay?
I believe we're at $15 an hour for lifeguards.
Okay.
And then there's some of our other roles, like if you became an aquatic instructor, there's even higher pay on the offing for that.
Okay, Dylan Smith. Dylan, I don't know if you were ever a lifeguard anywhere in your background, but you're up to the plate.
No, afraid. I'm afraid I was never that good at diving. So,
okay.
Actually, if I can make another pitch for a sort of city-related program, real quick, on the topic of parks, I've noticed lately that there are a number of parks that are available to be adopted through Tucson Clean and Beautiful, where people go out and help, once every month or so, go help clean up a place. And there are a whole lot of parks out there that need some people to step up and volunteer and try and take care of them. I know this because the Tucson Sentinel newsroom has adopted Sunset Park and El Presidio Plaza right outside of City Hall. We've been going down there and making sure to try and keep that place cleaned up. Cleaning up City Hall. That's what we do at the Sentinel.
Okay.
We need you in that role.
All right, Dylan.
Happy to do it.
Anything else, Dylan? Which direction would you like to go now?
If we can circle back to something sort of related to water real quick, actually, can you give us some sort of update of what's going on with this kind of heated dispute between the city and the county over differential water rates?
We are still in a dispute with one another. It's actually in the courts at this moment, so I can't really go into any detail, but I can say that the city and the county are working together, even though it's in the form of a lawsuit and a legal action. We do talk with each other about how do we move forward together, even though we have this fundamental dispute on this one particular piece. But that's where it sits today.
And this was more than 71,000 Tucson Water customers in the unincorporated Pima County area, and that includes my particular household. We have this water bill increase has already taken effect, correct, Tim?
That's
started
correct.
In December?
That's correct. So the customers have been paying those differential rates since December 1st, and there's governance about how those monies can be used. They're to be used to help with our low-income and customer assistance programs, to help with our water supply resiliency and stewardship, hearkening back to our earlier discussion about drought and preparing for the future, and then for infrastructure, water infrastructure, that serves those unincorporated customers. And so that's where those monies will be spent, and then we'll see how the dispute settles.
In my stack of stuff, city stuff, I've got all sorts of things here, and we're moving through lots of topics. So let's talk about the budget. It's coming up to budget time. I believe the next council meeting, there'll be kind of a preliminary look at the fiscal year, the spending program, which will begin July 1st, a 12-month program. Generally, what kind of shape is the city in, Tim?
The city's in as good a financial shape as it's been in recent past. That doesn't mean we have excess money. What it means is that we're not in dire straits. We have a structurally balanced budget, and we actually have the opportunity to continue some investments in our community moving forward. So we have what you're likely to see on the 19th is a balanced budget presented. And then leading into a conversation with mayor and council about some potential for continued investment in employees, so potential some discussion around salaries, and then investment in some of the areas where we've not had enough investment recently. So there's facilities of the city, there's continued investment in parks, there's our vehicles, there's a number climate action, there's a number of areas that it looks like we can have a really good conversation around how do we want to use our resources in those areas. And so some of that will take place over the next couple months, and then we are expecting that conversation will continue into the new fiscal year.
And that discussion will begin at the council meeting on April 19th.
That's correct.
All right, here's Dylan Smith. Go ahead, Dylan.
Tim, you mentioned taking care of employees. The city's had some serious troubles over the past several years recruiting people to the police department. Are you seeing the same kinds of problems trying to get people to come work for other departments?
We are. We have a shortfall in our staffing, not based on our ability to fund positions, but on our ability to find qualified folks and motivated folks to fill them. What I will say is over the last 2 months, we've seen improvement in that area. Around the first of the year, we were carrying over 600 vacancies. We've seen that number come down into the low 500s. So it nothing happens overnight in the city. And the other thing we say is nothing around here is easy. But we've seen improvement. And actually, just this morning, I was able to do the welcome to a new employee orientation. We had over 30 folks in that new employee orientation, whereas maybe 8 months ago, there might have been maybe a dozen. And so we are seeing an uptick. We did do adjustments to salaries that took effect this fiscal year to bring us to market-based pay. And so that's shown some improvement. We do have some tough-to-fill positions and areas where we're still struggling, but we have moved the needle. And the key is to stay competitive moving forward as we as we bring our staffing levels up to where they need to be.
And you did,
in what areas outside of police does that has that affected the city's ability to provide services?
So significant challenges still remain in the IT area. The market is so competitive for qualified IT professionals that it's really difficult to keep that staffing. The engineering space is one where not just Tucson but the whole industry has seen a downward trend in the number of folks entering the engineering and technical spaces. So we're approaching that with some new tools and looking at internships and apprenticeships and ability to, quote, grow our own folks in those areas and try to keep those services going.
And you have hired a new transportation and mobility director. I'm sure one of the areas that the new director will be looking at will be whether or not to continue the free transportation for bus service.
That's right. As your listeners know, we've not been charging fares for bus and the SunLink services since shortly after the onset of the pandemic. Thankfully, we've had some federal monies under the American Rescue Plan Act that have helped to cover that shortfall in revenue and keep that service free. But we're getting close to the time where we have to have that discussion about, does the city return to fare collection and what does that look like? So that'll be one of the many things on his plate as he takes over transportation and mobility.
And one of the many things on your plate concerns housing and community development. And as you well know, Tim, rents have just been skyrocketing. Housing and rents are a huge issue right now in this community.
It is. We talk about a lot of our challenges, whether they're water or the condition of our roads, but the most visible and maybe the most the most intractable thing to address is houselessness, and making sure that we are providing resources and access to those resources for those who want to take advantage of them and maybe bring themselves out of houselessness, and to make it so that those that are choosing to stay in that environment have a safe environment to live in as well in Tucson and be welcomed. So we have a number of things going on and significant investments. And two I'll highlight. We have a Housing First program. And if you haven't had a chance to chat with Brandy Champion yet, she's our Housing First director. She's been on the job for not even quite a year yet, and she's already made an impact. And one of our success stories is we bought the Wildcat Inn off on Oracle Road, and we've bought a couple other properties, and it provides us a place to, if we have a homeless encampment and folks who are looking for those services, we're able to give them a safe place to be and also wrap services around them. So our Housing First model is really showing some improvement on the conditions. The other is, for the first time in maybe forever, maybe in a long time, the city has applied for low-income housing tax credits as a developer. So we actually formed our own nonprofit in order to get more projects moving faster and try to get them built here in Tucson instead of other places. So we've gone down that path. It's a bold step, and we're hoping it'll bear fruit soon.
Okay, Dylan, before I let Tim Tomier go, do you have anything else?
Tim actually just answered a couple of questions that I was going to try and follow up on.
Okay,
on his own accord. So
about housing, right? Okay.
Yes. Yes.
All right. So, Dylan, stick around for a minute or so. I'm going to let Tim Tomier go. Thanks, Tim. Always a pleasure.
Thank you, Bill.
All right. The Buckmaster Show continues on this Friday. We'll be back with Dylan Smith. Talk a little bit about that big exclusive that Tucson Sentinel had early in the week. We'll talk with Dylan right after this.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Discover your world inside Biosphere 2. Explore living, breathing scientific research. Using the new Biosphere 2 Experience app, you can now explore one of the wonders of the world's amazing 30-year history and future through never-before-seen videos and photos. Visit today at info@biosphere2.org.
Hi, this is Pam Krim, CEO of the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona, where we set the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the place to turn for objective and unbiased information on businesses. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona at bbb.org/Tucson.
Are you searching for a sumptuous suite on the Italian Riviera, an exploration of the mighty Mississippi, or an indulgent spa in Cancun? Bon Voyage Travel will help you find exactly the vacation you're looking for anywhere in the world. With many cruises setting sail in over 1,100 hotels and resorts to choose from with our exclusive benefits, Bon Voyage Travel's experienced advisors are here to guide you every step of the way. Visit bvtravel.com or call 797-1110.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. Our thanks to Tim Tomier. Tim is always such a great interview because he covers so much at the city and he's very knowledgeable about what's going on. Thank him for being our guest. And we have still with us Dylan Smith, the editor, publisher, and the founder of TucsonSentinel.com. Dylan, Pima County Administrator Chuck Huckleberry, back in July 4th, I believe, of last year, switched his status from employee to contractor so he could start drawing his pension. And guess what? Nobody knew about it until your organization, the Tucson Sentinel, broke the story Monday, and when I say nobody knew about it, some people obviously did know about it, but maybe the people that matter the most, Chuck Huckleberry's bosses, the five members of the Pima County Supervisors, apparently didn't know about it because you broke the news to them. How'd this all come about, Dylan?
Well, it's been apparent for quite some time that Chuck Huckleberry was probably going to leave his post as county administrator after being so severely injured back at the end of October when a car smashed into a Jeep, which then smashed into him, and he was riding his bike. You know, he had a traumatic brain injury, broke some ribs, punctured a lung, and is quite far from fully recovered at this point, although he's doing a whole lot better. So in, poking around at that and asking some questions, I asked for some records. I asked the county for his personnel file, which is a public record that anybody can ask for and get a hold of. Except for, you know, more than a week later, they still haven't given that to me yet. But I also asked the Arizona State Retirement System for his file, if he had one. And they rather promptly turned over that information, which indicated that back on July 4th of last year, Chuck Huckleberry retired and began drawing his pension of $12,000 a month, in addition to what we've subsequently learned from a little bit of information from the county, you know, continuing to stay on as his contract allowed, as a contractor receiving his full paycheck. And we really should note that this sort of what's called a double dip with working as a contractor and also being retired and getting a pension is something that it not only is legal, it's actually there's a system for it under Arizona state law. So this isn't that's not the completely interesting part of this, although it's perhaps a bit more interesting because Chuck Huckleberry is a very highly paid person, unlike some of the more ordinary employees who end up doing this. But it is interesting, certainly, that his bosses, the members of the County Board of Supervisors, many of them, at least, had no inkling. He didn't tell them that he did this.
I mean, it would seem like the most transparent thing for Chuck, Mr. Huckleberry, to do was to just inform his bosses, the board, back in July of 2021, that he has executed this particular option in his contract, which, as you point out, it's legal, the double dipping, and just make it very transparent, and that he has now become under the status of a contractor. Wouldn't you think that would be kind of the preferred way to go?
There are certainly members of the Board of Supervisors who think that at the very, very least.
Yeah.
Because of the contracts that they gave to Chuck Huckleberry back in January 2021, and we pointed this out at the time with the news story and also an analysis piece, they added the part that allowed him to make this transition without having to negotiate a new contract. The terms of his contract basically remained in place, whether he was working as an employee who was paying into the pension or as a contractor retiree afterwards. His duties and his pay and benefits would basically remain the same. One of the wrinkles in this is not very long after his accident, the county had to move him from being essentially paid full-time to being paid 19 hours a week because of something in Arizona state law that's called the 2020 rule, where you can't have a double dip in your first fiscal year after starting it the entire way through. For 6 months of that year, at least, you have to be less than a half-time employee. Well, Huckleberry's contract as county administrator did not allow for him specifically to be a half-time employee. That's a full-time job. Generally, you know, with a workaholic like Huckleberry, very much more than a full-time job. And so basically 3 weeks after he was injured, he would have had to have transitioned. And even at that point, it seems like he didn't tell at least all of the supervisors that something was going to have to happen.
Let's see if we can work Kurt in. He's been holding. Kurt, you're with Dylan Smith.
Good afternoon. I wanted to ask a question. There's some buzz out in the community and the circles that I am a part of that Chuck Huckleberry's resignation might have been prompted by your story, Dylan. And I'm wondering if you can speak to that.
Okay. Dylan?
We can't say that it was prompted because we published the story. You know, it was known, and we published a news story the Friday preceding this Monday scoop that Huckleberry that his resignation was going to be on the agenda for Tuesday's Board of Supervisors meeting. So things were in the works, certainly, but perhaps the fact that I was out there, asking some questions, asking for records, poking around, trying to find out what his status was and what was in the works, would that might have sped things up a little bit. I think also just the fact that, you know, it may well have been that just all of his leave time was exhausted. And if he wasn't working, there wasn't any, you know, foundation for him to be paid anymore at that point.
Kurt,
he's doing better. He wants to come back to work, expressed a lot of interest in coming back, but just doesn't seem to be, you know, quite there yet. And, you know, just on a personal basis, it'd be nice to, you know, see him, you know, fit and hale and hearty and at least back on his bike riding on the loop again.
Yeah, Kurt, I'm out of time, but did you have a quick follow?
I think Dylan covered it for me, okay. Knowing that he was poking around beforehand, yeah. and Mr. Huckleberry probably knew about that.
Yeah. Okay. Kurt, thanks for calling. And Dylan, we're going to let you go. Thank you very much, and congratulations to you and your team at TucsonSentinel.com. Appreciate it very much. Thank you.
Thanks, Bill. Thanks, Kurt. Everybody take care.
Okay. Dan Gibson is coming up next with Weekend Watch. We'll be right back in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio, our live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management.
Tucson's original gastropub, Noble Hops in Oro Valley, proudly announces a second Tucson area location where you'll enjoy locally brewed craft beer and gastropub fine fare. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and now at the Doubletree Hotel on Alvernon across from Tucson's Reed Park. More on the web at noblehops.com. A Citizens Advisory Committee of the Regional Transportation Authority is starting to review projects submitted by RTA member jurisdictions for consideration for the next RTA plan. The committee will consider plan goals and performance factors as they move into the selection process. The RTA will seek public feedback on the committee's draft plan when it is ready. Learn more about plan goals and sign up to stay informed at rtanext.com.
Hello, I'm Danette Bewley, CEO of the Tucson Airport Authority. At Tucson International Airport, we're nonstop supporting jobs and prosperity as an economic engine for our entire region. From an innovative and touchless passenger experience to earning the GBAC Star Accreditation, the Golden Standard for Cleanliness, our team is ready to welcome you back to Tucson International Airport. Begin your journey with us. We're nonstop for you, Southern Arizona.
Vets working hard to save wildlife covered in cactus spines. A skunk left for dead, miraculously saved by a caring citizen. Those are just a couple of the headlines from the nonprofit Tucson Animal Rescue Center, where thousands of animals are cared for each year at its state-of-the-art Far East Side Tucson facility. Rescue, rehab, and release. The Tucson Wildlife Center, saving wildlife for more than two decades. Donate online at TucsonWildlife.com or call 290-WILD.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over five buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Time to stir it up. It's Weekend Watch, this week with Dan Gibson, filling in for Matt Russell. Weekend Watch, presented by Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. We love Silver City. Only a three-hour drive east of Tucson. Lots to do, mostly outside activities, which makes it perfect this time of year, where it's about 70 degrees this afternoon in Silver City, with elevation of about 5,500 feet. Great elevation, like Denver. You know, think Denver, mountain high, southwest New Mexico, spelled out .org. Your first stop and you're planning for that three-hour drive east of Tucson. Here is Mr. Dan Gibson. Hey, Dan, how are you?
I am all right. Totally different desk, different space, but yeah, same Dan Gibson filling in for Matt Russell, who couldn't be bothered to do your show.
Yes, and you have transitioned from your very successful days over at Visit Tucson. You're now heading up public relations and community development. Is that right, for Tucson Medical Center?
Yeah, communications and marketing. I got my hands in a lot of stuff around here. But it's still early. It's the end of week five.
So and still
just keep swimming.
Still very much connections, thank goodness, to the Buckmaster Show. And Dan, what's going on? Any tips for the weekend, my friend?
So many tips. Well, let's start with the return of Second Saturdays. It's celebrating its 10th anniversary, and I think if you've been in the Tucson area during that time period, either accidentally heading downtown to go to a show at the Fox or Rialto or something like that, you've run into Second Saturdays, or you make it a part of your sort of monthly calendar. It's such a great event with where downtown comes alive with vendors and music and food and all the things. That's sort of an amplification of all the great things that happen downtown all the time. So it's been taking some time off during the pandemic, but we're back 6 to 10 p.m. Saturday, April 9th. My suggestion, see the band Los Velvets, who will be playing on Scott, one of Tucson's best bands. I think they're playing from like 8 to 9 or 9 to 10.
What else?
Oh, gosh. Well, let's see. If you want to maybe take a road trip, some of Arizona's finest wineries in Sonoyta are having a Saturday block party this April 9th, from Saturday from 11 to 4 p.m. Arizona Hops and Vines, Dos Cabezas, Hannah's Hill, the Meeting Room, Los Miliches Vineyard, and Rune Wines, which are all sort of on the Highway 82 route. They'll be doing something. Each place will be doing something special. They're having wine specials. Rune is unveiling its new food menu, which is pretty exciting. If you haven't been down there in a bit, it's the views are incredible, the wine also incredible. But also, if you've been missing out, go grab yourself a bottle of wine and get to see a little bit of what Southern Arizona has to offer.
Third time's a charm. I've got time for one more.
All right. Well, the Made in Tucson Market also happening downtown. This is Sunday on 4th Avenue from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. It's on 7th between 4th and 5th. It's a celebration of local artists. So you're going to see a little bit of everything. Jewelry, art, food, clothing, candles, plants, soap. All the soap you probably can handle. All of that happening right there. Just a lot of incredible artisans working in Tucson, and you'll get to see a collection of their work. Really something for everybody down there. They do a great job of organizing that outdoor market.
All right, Dan Gibson, glad you are settling in at your new desk at TMC. Congratulations. Have a great weekend.
My pleasure. You too.
All right. The Buckmaster Show, a presentation of Bill Buckmaster Communications, which is wholly responsible for the content of our program. Original theme music composed by our German friend, Christophan. Thanks to Rose Brandt, making sure all the podcasts are up in a very timely manner. Everybody here at KVOI, including Tom Fairbanks, engineering and producing our show, and the entire team at Bustos Media Tucson, which makes the Buckmaster team feel so very much at home. Have a great weekend, everybody.